Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and one last time, welcome to So I Got Thinking, the weekly podcast where we take the iconic questions of Carrie Bradshaw and apply them to modern life and love. As ever, you are listening to
Dylan Jones and Juno Dawson for the last time.
let's keep that in. You're listening to Juno Dawson and Dylan B. Jones, just as ourselves.
Yeah.
We found ourselves at the bottom of a handbag.
Like Carrie, our Dior, not our handbag was broken, our Dior was broken.
The lining of our vintage Dior was ripped.
As she very clearly says.
But after six seasons, hundreds of episodes, hundreds, at least 100 episodes, we've reached the end of the regular line. Now, don't be too sad, because we still have two movies and a spin-off to consider. But yeah. but this is it.
Yeah, and it's a symbolic end because, I mean, it's such an ending for the show, isn't it? Like, it's such a final, it's a quintessential finale episode. It could not be more. It sounds silly, but I'm sure listeners and you will understand what I'm saying. It's so final, even though it wasn't, in the end, wasn't at all final. But yeah, we were just saying before we hit record that we got quite emotional.
Oh, I sobbed. And weirdly, I still remember how bereft I felt at it ending.
Yeah.
Just because we didn't know we were getting two films and a spin-off series. And it felt really final, you know, and it was still in its prime. It felt it did have more to give. It could have kept going, kind of.
I think I was so sad that I went back straight, as soon as the first time I finished it the first time round, I just went straight back to season one, episode one, and hit play. I was like, I'm not ready. I'm not ready to say goodbye.
Correct, yeah.
You're right. I think it could have had more life in it, but I'm so glad that they ended it without squeezing the last life out of it.
On reflection, and maybe we'll talk about this at the end, would it have been better had they just ended it? But we'll come to that later. It's like that thing, isn't it? It's like, hindsight is such a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
But 2003 Juno would have been thrilled to learn in just six short years there was going to be a film. Because I felt like it was like grieving. I loved them. These women were my friends, you know, and I felt like I was losing them forever.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get into it. Dylan, one last time, break out that pot. Open your potted synopsis.
So, we're still in Paris. Carrie has some major realizations in Paris, and Carrie's storyline is really identity focused, isn't it? It's about her getting her identity back and just finally, after 6 years, working out what she wants from life, from love. She wants real love. And it's spurred by kind of Petrovsky's behaviour kind of reaching its peak red flagness, and also Big arriving to save the day.
Indeed.
Charlotte and Harry contend with adoption woes. A couple arrives with their prospective adoption plans and it doesn't work out. And then that all gets resolved in the end. Miranda and Steve are contending with Mary, Steve's mother's health conditions, mm-hmm. and Samantha and Smith, Samantha's libido. Samantha gets her groove back.
She does.
Is the storyline for Samantha.
It's a longer episode. It's a 45-minute episode, which gives everybody a little bit more chance to breathe and do stuff. There is so much extra time. In fact, there is time for like a 4-minute montage of Carrie living her art house fantasy.
I enjoy that montage. It's very memorable and surreal.
It is. Well, it's like, don't go to Paris if you're not going to use Paris.
Yeah.
And actually, do you know, I'm a huge apologist for that, because if you think of how many times New York has been used as a backdrop and how often Carrie has hailed a cab and tripped off a curb and run to the stock exchange and all those things she does, I love that when she's in Paris, there's a different language to Carrie. It's almost like she's trying on Paris.
Yeah.
As like a different outfit, kind of.
That's a really good analogy.
Juliette Bilodeau says, if it does not fit, it is disaster.
It is like couture. What does she say? A relationship is like couture. If it does not fit, it's a disaster. She says idios as well. She calls the chairs, they are idios.
And unlike the Eiffel Tower, I would agree with Juliet. Those chairs are horrific.
Naff. Very naughties. Very mm-hmm. naff naughties. Designed by Philip Stark, that restaurant, apparently.
Where is the restaurant? Did you Google it?
I did. It's because I recognise it. I think I've been once for a drink. It's called Kong, and it's on Rue Rivoli. On a rooftop, and it is very well known, but not very good.
Maybe I'll go. I'm doing some book touring in Paris in a few weeks. I will be at the Paris Book Festival and the Rennes Book Festival, if anybody is in that neck of the woods, if we have any French listeners.
What you really need to do is get your French fans to organise a special party in your honour and then not turn up.
Yeah, well, I think that's what they're doing. My 10 French readers have literally organised
a party
in my honour, so that's where I'm going.
Testing my Duolingo
to the absolute limit.
Oh, I've been on the French Duolingo as well recently. Mm-hmm. She's quite obscure, isn't she? Some of the things she comes out with. Duolingo.
What, Duolingo.
Juliette Bilodeau?
No, the Duolingo owl. Oh, yeah. Potato, patata.
They've got their similarities.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? But yeah, a huge respect for HBO. And it sounds, because it sounds like a simple thing, but it's still to this day quite rare. Shooting on location mm-hmm. in the streets of Paris, like, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of money. They're so good at doing that, both in New York, and great that they did it in Paris as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just makes such a difference. Just amazing.
So we start with Juliette Bilodeau, which it feels very European, sitting down for lunch with your lover's ex-wife. And, of course, Carole Bouquet, who plays Juliette, is known to British viewers as the Bond girl from For Your Eyes Only,
yep.
in which she's horribly dubbed. It's one of the worst things. Bond films dubbing Bond girls was never cute.
What was she speaking French and they dubbed it in? Or like, what, did they just dub her voice
They
over?
Overdubbed her with a British accent, yeah.
What the fuck? Why couldn't she just be French? That's hotter anyway.
Well, whatever. And she's meant to be Greek. So Milena is meant to be Greek. It's the Greece one.
All right. Okay.
And but also she was, I believe, the face of Chanel for much of the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. She is stunning. And I like that she's not like, and I don't know if this was purposeful casting, but she's a very European kind of beauty. She's not like perfected American beauty. She's got a bit of
bad teeth. Yeah.
She's got a bit of
And they say Brits have bad teeth.
So all that smoking and red wine, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she was a great character. She's a very likable character.
I really like Julia. I quite like that, like her daughter, she's a little hard. She's got an edge. But like, she says a lot with a look, then change is possible.
Yeah, that was quite an ominous line when Carrie's like, oh God, yeah, he's very supportive. And then she's like, yes, well, it seems change is possible.
And this is what writers call foreshadowing, where we see that Juliet knows Alexander very well, and she says it herself, she did not like coming second to his career. And very tellingly as well, Alex has never once said that Juliet had a career of her own. She was just his ex-wife.
That is telling.
That's a red flag.
I really like that Carrie has the cigarette that Juliet offers.
Well, you would, Dylan. You would. I mean,
I would, and I'm in Paris. but it's also like a sign that she's getting her identity back a bit. She's being a bit more independent. That's what I took it as, anyway.
Or is it a sign of her taking a step backwards?
Could be
to a younger, less clued up version of Carrie
regressing a bit. I like it when Petrovsky says she looks sexy with the cigarette, and she's like, "It's killing me." True.
Are you so guilty of killing you over lunch? yeah, we love Julia. I think the spin off they should have done should have been Julia and Chloe just going around different places and just going idiots.
Wearing purple eyeshadow.
Smirking and criticising.
That's the name of the show. But yeah, leaving your girlfriend to have lunch with your ex-wife is so bad. It's so bad.
Oh yeah, Alex is fully on his villain trajectory now. I think he's just a cock. And they're not even trying to hide it at this point. He dumps her with Juliet. He dumps her outside a patisserie. And then the most unforgivable, of course, is Carrie's little book party.
I don't know what it is about this. It's genuinely one of the most distressing scenes in television for me. I think it's like a unique combination of like my FOMO that I get, and I imagine myself if I was Carrie, and also like the secondhand empathy for those people, the lovely like French gay and girl who love
her. Who got stood up.
Yeah, who got stood up. And it's so crushing when she arrives and just the red wine stain on the book cover, so crushing. but the trot across cobbles to MC Solar is worth it for that.
With more French rap music.
Yeah, La Belle et le Bad Boy, iconic.
There is like a glimmer there that she could have possibly had some sort of life in Paris. You know, we don't know. As a writer, I think it's important to maintain sort of boundaries with your readers. I think that is important. I think sometimes through your work, readers can think they know you on a personal level, when actually you are presenting a version of yourself in both your fiction and your nonfiction.
Yeah.
So I don't know how, if Carrie would have, you know, truly found a friendship group with her bookshop friends. But it was a start, you know. It was something that was just for her and something that was about her.
Yeah, and it was nothing to do with Petrovsky. Like, it was about her achievements and her life. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, actually, now you say it, that is, like, an important thing.
Yeah. And as Juliet foresaw, maybe change is not possible, because that very night, Carrie wearing a tutu, absolutely a throwback to the introduction sequence. I don't believe anyone who would say that wasn't deliberate.
Yeah.
Carrie in a beautiful sort of mint green tutu. Alexander hijacks her night and says that he needs her to go to his preview soft launch thing.
Yeah, and then just leaves her sitting on a bench, not being allowed to smoke in the museum. Yeah. So then they have the fight in the hotel room.
Yeah, although can I just say, before we move on to the slap, I quite like that we don't see the light installations.
Yeah, I mean,
I like that we only see a corridor of the museum.
I didn't need to see them. I think we see them like when he's working on them in New York, don't
genius!
We?
Genius! The 27-year-old curator thinks they're genius.
What if they think I'm the old man with the silly light machines?
Well, a lot of country people will go to those light machines and go, I could have done that. Yeah. The absolute worst. And do you know what? Go to the Tate Modern. This is a treat for visitors to London. Go to the Tate Modern and just wait for someone to say, I could have done that. Oh, yeah, but you didn't. Okay. You didn't though, did you?
Anyone could have done anything. I could have directed and written Sex and the City, but I just was born in, at the wrong time in the wrong country.
I think there might be a bit more to filmmaking than that, Dylan. I'm not going to lie.
But yeah.
Because I'm the ultimate Lily Allen. I'm the ultimate, oh, I could do that. But but actually, no. No.
Also, come to, if you want to see good art, come to my road. A Banksy has just appeared on my road. I'm very excited.
Is that on your street? Of course, Finsbury Park.
Yeah. Finsbury Park, yeah.
Have you been down and had a look, Dylan?
I haven't, no, because every time I've walked past, there's a big...
It'll be there for a while.
It will. It's
still London.
Every time I've walked past, there's been like a huge crowd of people with their iPhones out. And I'm like, I don't want to be one of those people. I'm going to wait until the...
Come to Finsbury Park and see the art, but don't take a picture of it.
But don't take a picture. But it was a weird thought. Like I said to Chris, because it appeared overnight. And I said to Chris, God, like if one of us had happened to be walking past... late at night, like coming back from the pub or whatever, and filmed Banksy doing that, we would have got probably hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands for that video.
But, yeah, but he's a magic elf, isn't he? So the artwork just appears.
Yeah, it manifests.
You never catch him.
Where were we?
Oh, the slap.
The slap. It was kind
of... So Carrie, she finally calls him out on his bullshit.
Yeah. It was a lot more kind of extreme than I remembered. Like, was it by accident? I mean, I think they kind of deliberately make it ambiguous. Like, it was kind of by accident, but things like that.
Yeah, I've always chosen to believe it is, but it looks like one of those very choreographed TV moments.
Yes, yeah.
That I don't really understand the physics of it. So he kind of tries to brush her off.
Yeah, but too
hard. Somehow hits her, but I don't.
But also, like, no one does that. Like, accidentally. Yeah.
Well, because it's the kind of thing where if he did that, he might have poked her in the eye, and I would have possibly. And she was like, bloody hell, you poked me in the eye. But the fact he somehow backhand.
Yeah. I think he's supposed to be just being like, get off, get off, like that. We're doing hand motions that the listeners can't see.
Yeah. Dylan and I flapping at a Zoom. Yeah.
But yeah, she's quite shaken by that. And then the necklace falls apart. Again, identity, like their relationship is falling apart. The necklace that he gives her falls to pieces.
She has to pluck diamonds out of her cleavage.
In this expensive hotel. What is it she says? And then we get the real love speech.
Yeah, okay, find the real love. So let me do, right, here we go. Because I want to do it right. Let's do it justice. Carrie, real love speech. Okay. So this is, again, we're back on my X Factor drama edition. I'm someone who's looking for love. Real love. Ridiculous, inconvenient, consuming, can't live without each other love. And I don't think that love is here in this expensive suite. In this lovely hotel in Paris. And scene.
I scoffed when I forgot about, I remembered the ridiculous inconvenient love, but I forgot in this expensive suite in Paris. Like, come on. Okay.
In Paris. In Europe.
In the world.
In the global West. On Earth.
In the universe, in this galaxy. Oh, God. Yeah, Michael Patrick King getting a bit carried away there, I think. But iconic.
Iconic, very written. That would be the note from any of my script editors. Oh, it feels a little written.
This whole episode is, Carrie's bits are. And I wonder, I think it might be deliberate. Like, it's very deliberately, particularly the dialogue with Big. Like, it's very, again, Audrey Hepburn-esque. Like, it's very...
Very much so, yeah.
Like, when it's very old school, the kiss at the end when she's like, take me home. It's like very, like, old school. And I'm not mad. It's kind of, it's like twee retro. Whimsical.
Yeah, we know. I mean, Carrie has been feeling her fantasy for a while now.
For a long time.
The riding around Central Park in a sleigh. You know, she's gone to the dark side, hasn't she? I will say her outfits in this episode, I despised the Beetlejuice outfit last week, but I love, God, that mint-coloured coat with the fur hat.
Lovely,
stunning.
Yeah.
The seafoam tutu, stunning. Pretty much every outfit she wears this episode is divine.
I particularly noted the very, very last outfit in those last shots at the end. Just beautiful.
Yes.
Just like so many layers, just like so ornate to look at and amazing.
Even the outfit she flies home in.
Yeah.
The big fur trimmed coat was done.
Her hair, of course, looking incredible.
The lion hair and the some poor Russian woman who donated her hair to Carrie.
In a way, I think, if no other reason, it's good that it ended at season six, because Carrie's hair just would have become unmanageable.
Looking like Trixie Mattel kind of walking around. Well, the makeup was getting that way as well. So the slap happens.
Yeah.
She decides to get herself a suite at the same hotel.
Yeah.
Using her dreadful French. And then big turns up.
Yes.
And it's quite lovely. I can't help but think they shot or attempted to shoot a scene where she used the diamonds to trip Big.
Oh, possibly.
I don't know if this is law. I don't know if there is any... I don't know where it is, because obviously I'm living out of storage at the moment. I don't know from the Kiss and Tell book if Sarah Jessica talks about a version where she showgirls those diamonds. But there is such undue prominence on the little round diamonds.
Interesting.
That I can't help but wonder if there was a version where, in order to stop him punching Petrovsky, she scatters diamonds and he slips on them.
Well, if that was the case and it was cut, good, because that's ridiculous.
That's nice, yeah.
Or maybe he, so they trip, they fall over in the hallway. Maybe originally she drops her diamonds everywhere and she sees him and he, trips on the diamonds. And she's like, oh my God, it's Big. I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe.
But hurrah, they go to the bridge. He doesn't die of a heart attack yet.
Yeah, oh God.
You're going to have a heart attack. Yeah. Okay, Carrie, yeah. Cassandra, the Oracle. And then they have a very, again, you're right, George Peppard, Audrey Hepburn.
Exchange.
And Miss New York, take me home.
Take me home. Kiss me, you big crybaby.
Yeah, it's all a lot, isn't it? But then they go home. We get a lovely throwback to Abs-fucking-lutely.
Yeah.
How lovely that he has a catchphrase, even though he only says it twice.
Yeah.
And off we go then. We have the Candy Staton, I Feel the Love moment where Carrie's internal monologue comes back. Hooray! It's back.
We didn't have it, did we? Until
she comes back to her laptop.
Yeah.
And presumably gets her column back. Or maybe she's writing her new book, because we know by the time the film comes around, she has published multiple books on her love life.
True.
A la Dolly Alderton.
Yeah. Hi, Dolly. Before we move on from Paris, we've had some lovely feedback from a French listener.
Oh, bonjour.
Who says, bonjour. As a French listener, I was born and raised Parisian. And I wanted to say I've been waiting for you to speak about this episode for years. Thank you both, they say, for appreciating French humour and telling everyone we are not that bad, we're just French. Cécile Cassel is indeed quite famous in France. This is Chloé. And she also makes great music under the name Holly Ziz. Thank you for calling bullshit on Carrie having been to every museum twice. That's my job area. And it couldn't possibly be true. Thank you so much and see you next week for more Imaginary Paris.
Oh, salut.
Also, the Petrovsky Hive has risen unexpectedly. Unexpectedly. And I feel like, because it's the final episode, we should acknowledge and recognize the Petrovsky Hive. So we've had a couple
of comments.
I know, I'm surprised, but you know.
Russian bot? Hang on.
Oh my God. So someone says, this podcast is obsessed with seeing the worst in Petrovsky. Ignore the haircut, someone says. And then there's another comment. I actually don't get your interpretation of Petrovsky. I think you're going overboard on Petrovsky's behavior. I don't see any indication that he's isolating her from anyone. We see Carrie with her friends a lot. She hasn't seen them for 4 days. How often are you supposed supposed to see your friends. Everyone is entitled to their opinion.
Thank you, Mikhail Barashnikov, for writing in. I stand by every word I said, because I came into this trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. When I say I have tried to look for the positives in Alexander Petrovsky, but all I'm seeing is a lot of red flags, more red flags than Brighton Marathon, to be honest.
I will say, when he said in this episode, I thought I was clear about who I was from the start. He kind of was, to be fair.
He love bombed her.
That's true.
Classic love bombing.
Yeah, but she always knew he was like a complicated, self-absorbed artist.
She did, because she Googled him, the many loves of Alexander Petrovsky.
Yeah, and she met him at like an art installation where a woman was in a box.
Foreshadowing, yeah. So much foreshadowing. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, we will pick up on the touching, I found all three of them very touching.
Yes.
And final shouts for Samantha, Miranda and Charlotte. We'll see you in one sec.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the last regularly scheduled. So I got to thinking, as we talk about An American Girl in Paris, part deux, let's pick up, let's spin the wheel. Let's do Samantha first.
Okay.
She's getting a wig bleached.
We have bad British accent corner.
My God, why?
You'd better not be doing it.
Yeah. That'd be a first.
That'd be a first. A touch of this blonde is going to be perfection. It sounds like Nigel from the Wild Thornberrys.
Why?
But yeah, quite a mood, Samantha and Smith getting the same haircut and colour. I enjoyed that.
And Samantha's libido has taken a bashing, which is relatable as someone. One of the big things about trans women that a lot of people don't recognise is that essentially we kind of undergo chemical castration in order to bring about our sort of physical changes. If you want to feminise the body, you need to switch off testosterone. And of course, the hormone testosterone is what makes everyone horny, whether you are cisgender, transgender, male, female. The more testosterone you have, the hornier you will be.
It's the one that tells us to go out and fuck, isn't it? It's the one that's like,
absolutely correct.
Go and do your thing, go and reproduce. Obviously, it doesn't apply to us, but.
And that's why some cis women are hornier than others. They just have more testosterone in their bodies.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I used to be, as we've talked about many times, I used to be something of a hellcat. And that was all testosterone. It wasn't, I used to think it was part of who I was. It was part of my personality. And it wasn't part of my personality because my personality hasn't changed. What changed was my hormone balance. And so actually, I don't think there's any such thing as, that's why I don't think there's any such thing as a slut. I think it's just testosterone. And, and when we switched mine off so that I became beautiful and boobalicious, you know, I was sad. I did, like Samantha, in a strange way, it felt like I'd lost an old friend, like the, my libido being my old friend, kind of. But it was kind of this necessary trade-off to be the woman that I am now. So, and that's why it's so galling when you know, people refer to trans people as being somehow perverted, because I'm like, less than I used to be.
That's a great answer. And so, yeah, so Samantha's testosterone gets switched off by chemo.
Her chemo, yeah.
Which...
Smith is so hot with his shaved head. It's a shame.
Yeah, he does look particularly good in this episode.
In a loincloth. He looks, yeah. He really rocks a loincloth.
But I thought it was very clever of them to turn things on their head with Samantha in the final episode. Like, she's obviously the sex one. So yeah, to then flip it completely, it was a really clever move to sort out her, to finish her story, her arc. Her sat at the counter smoking a joint in a pair of Ugg boots was a mood.
Vibe.
And yeah, we get our first, after 6 years, our first kind of proper mention of like an open relationship being an option. For her and Smith, but in the end they decide not to.
A bunch of, I think that, are they hyacinths or something? I'm not sure. A bunch of,
oh yeah, the white flowers.
Yeah, biennial flowers. Triggers Samantha to actually realise, no, she does want to be monogamous with Smith. There was some chat of monogamy with Richard Wright, so I wonder if it was a throwback to Richard Wright, where he said that they were not the monotonous type. And it was nice. Now, I think it would be a good place to talk about the often discussed issue with this final episode, that for Michael Patrick King, apparently a happy ending required all four women to have a boyfriend. And that is kind of depressing. For a show which is very obviously, even as those French people say, I used to say single woman. You know, this was a show that so celebrated single women. And so it's kind of bleak that the way they finished that story was by having them all in a monogamous relationship.
Yeah, I will say...
That said, go on.
I was going to say, I mean, it does... At least makes sense. It didn't feel like it was like he suddenly pushed them. They were suddenly all pushed into it to wrap it all up like a bow. Like, it just made sense. It happened to make sense with their storylines.
I think they've done some work since to kind of address those criticisms. We will get to the film and we'll get to Stephen Miranda with And Just Like That, obviously. I think the criticism was particularly leveled at the Samantha plot because she was the one who was the most triumphantly single, but each of those four characters has gone on a little journey. And 6 seasons ago, it was kind of unthinkable that Samantha would have been able to have the kind of relationship she has with Smith. And so actually, I would defend it, because otherwise her character wouldn't have evolved. And actually... The natural progression of that is when Samantha then kind of rediscovers herself in the first Sex and the City film, I'm a big defender of the first Sex and the City film. I think it all makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
And I think it was best sort of summed up in Carrie's last monologue, where she examines how far each of the women have come, kind of. And so while... Because I was single at the time this ended, and I did sort of think like, oh, well, I guess... You know, I'm still looking for my happy ending then, if I haven't got a boyfriend, kind of. But
I think a better, in a funny kind of way, a better arc, as much as we love Harry, don't get me wrong, a better arc would have been Charlotte ending up single, because she is so desperate to have a relationship and so like has such a complex about like societal pressures of marriage and relationships and stuff. Mm-hmm. It would have been genius if she had like found herself and been like, actually, I don't need all this. I'm going to be single. I'm going to buy an art gallery.
Yes. Yeah.
That would have been great. But yeah, but as it stands, I'm not mad, like, but also completely acknowledge like one of them should have, at least one of them should have been single at the end.
Maybe we're overthinking it, and actually, while people might claim they loved this show as like a feminist show, really, it's also a romantic show, and it's a show that does celebrate, well, back to Carrie's speech, real all-consuming love. That's kind of what this show is about. And I wonder if slightly that's Carrie stating the show's purpose. Mm. And that if you thought this was a show about feminism, maybe you're wrong. Maybe that's what the show is about.
Well, the movies, the genre, the official genre of the movies is rom-com, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, TV shows don't really have, like, the rom-com, aren't usually categorised as, like, rom-coms. It's usually either, like, drama or comedy, isn't it, for a TV show. But yeah, the movies are rom-coms. So I suppose that tells you what you need to know.
Exactly. So Samantha, anyway, hurrah, come the end of the episode, she finds her orgasm again. Although I will say, that final fuck, bumpy, looks bumpy.
Yeah, I got a bit of ouch for both of them on my pelvis bone.
It's like they weren't quite going at the same rhythm. She was going, and he was more going,
But then if you hit that hip bone, oh. God, you can tell we're getting old, can't you?
But I do. I mean, God love Kim Cattrall. Oh, just for her physical performance, her openness.
Yeah.
Her relationship with Smith, who's the actor's name I've completely forgotten. Jason Lewis. Her chemistry. Because, I mean, that what a scene to play. I mean, they must have had, I like to think they must have had a great kind of rapport to be able to do those scenes time and again, kind of like, back again. Here we go. Little tiny modesty pouches all around. And the fact he came back for both movies as well, I think that sort of says that there was good feeling, because otherwise he would not have been back for those movies. So
he seems great. I don't know anything about him, but he seems great.
No, seems like a good egg. I hope he's Jason Lewis, wherever you are, I like to think you're a good egg.
We wish you well.
We wish you well. Let's move on to Charlotte and Harry.
This was the, I mean, don't get me, the whole episode is great, but if I had to pick a low light, this was the low light. And it's interesting because, so it's the couple arrive from...
Charlotte, North Carolina.
From Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's interesting because it's a very cliched, the whole thing is very cliche.
Well, it's like Anthony says, it's very TV movie of the week, isn't it?
And it's interesting that, like, they have him say that, and he even says, like, dumb toothless yokels. So it sort of, like, acknowledges that the storyline is cliche, then does it anyway. It's a bit odd. So they obviously, it turns out that they just wanted to see New York, and actually they don't want to give up their child. Mm. Part of the reason I rolled my eyes is I have seen this kind of, and it's quite a cheap, like, emotional storyline. And I've seen it, like, countless times in TV shows.
And this also a little bit problematic as well. Yeah. Something... Now, we have much... In the UK, we have much, much stricter laws on surrogacy. It's way, way harder to both be a surrogate and also to use surrogacy. The notion that our laws are designed to protect people from exploitation on both sides of that arrangement.
Yeah.
It's... There's something not cute about having Charlotte and Harry... as enormously wealthy, sort of upper class people, kind of sort of slightly, there's an air of sort of wealth shaming, like the fact there's a lot made of the fact he doesn't know what locks are, like is that a fish? And it feels a bit judgmental of that kind of.
I just didn't quite get, I wrote that down and I was like, what are they trying to say here? Like, what is this? Stranger.
And strangely, I think Friends did it better. Actually, I think obviously Monica and Chandler use a surrogate, Anna Faris, and it feels less.
Oh, yeah, I remember that vaguely.
Less gross somehow.
I mean, partly.
And yeah, no, and it's sad. And I think Kristen Davis plays it really well.
Yeah.
That moment where she very sympathetically says, "We're not getting the baby, are we?"
Yeah.
And I think it's a good performance from the surrogate mum as well. Kind of, I slightly wonder if it could have been more interesting if she'd been slightly younger, if that was kind of the thing.
We changed our minds.
We changed our minds. And yeah, the phrase "we just wanted to see New York City" is devastating. You know, you can see why Harry is furious.
But I wrote down, Charlotte has really, it's great in this sense. It shows how much Charlotte has grown. Like, she doesn't freak out. She's not devastated. In fact, she comforts Harry, which shows like massive growth.
Huge growth, yeah.
So yeah. And then,
slightly adding is then obviously the adoption of Rose. No,
Lily.
The adoption of Lily from China, which is a throwback to her marriage to Trey, when she suggests adopting a Mandarin baby, and Bunny says, "I don't enjoy Mandarin food, and I do not enjoy Mandarin child." So we have a throwback, which we always love a throwback.
Yeah.
This was something that had to be addressed in, and just like that as well, the sort of the optics of an enormously wealthy white couple adopting a Chinese child, calling her Lily, and her not speaking Mandarin, you know. And I think it's one of those kind of, I don't know how I feel about it. I know a lot of people have a lot of feelings about it. I'm not sure what my feelings are.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, you know, but, I mean, obviously it's not real. If it was real, I'd be like, yeah, optics. But also, there was a child in need who needed a home, and they gave her a lovely home.
And so. They did, exactly. And Charlotte, and it's very touching when she sees Lily for the first time, and she cries and she goes, "That's her baby." I get a little tear. Now, it's an interesting point while we're on Charlotte is the editing of the Anthony dialogue around the child from Guatemala. Oh. Now, depending on which version you're watching, there are two versions of this scene. There is the version that is on Now TV, which is where I know some gays who got a kid from Guatemala for $100. Or you could have the dubbed version where he says, "Got a kid from Guatemala," and they like love it.
Interesting. I guess because that it's illegal, isn't it, paying for a child?
Mm-hmm.
Or being paid for a child.
Yep, so it's interesting. There are two versions in the world. Let us know which version you watched this week.
We might be about to get someone at Now TV fired for putting the wrong version up.
No, the overdubbed version sounded horrific. So I'm glad the unedited version is on Now TV.
Interesting. Good bit of trivia there.
All's well that ends well.
Yeah.
Except, of course, they're about to adopt Lily, destroyer of lives.
Little do they know.
Do they know what's coming.
Destroyer.
I'm ready to have sex now.
Destroyer of worlds. Lily Rose, Lily Goldenblatt. Miranda, this one got me.
Miranda.
This one always gets you. I know it gets you, this one.
just ugly crying. 20 years on. If I need to let some tears out, this or Buffy's mum dying. It's one of those two things.
You love. That you love. Is love.
Oh, don't stop. I'll do it again. So, because, do you know what? It's about the hierarchy of mothers in Miranda's life.
Yeah.
Which harks back to one of the finest episodes, My Mother Bored Myself, where Miranda struggles to let herself be mothered and really let herself be loved, which has been a running theme with Miranda.
Yeah.
And so while it is, of course, touching to see her care for Mary Brady, who Anne Meara turns in a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, God.
Mary Brady in this episode. It's more sweet to see that she's found this surrogate mother, a big theme of this episode. She's found a surrogate mother in Magda. And when Magda kisses Miranda.
Yeah,
That's the bit that gets me.
Yeah, because Magda knows. Magda is magical, as we've said before.
sees Miranda. She sees Miranda like no one else sees her.
Yeah. I really loved, and something I'd never really noticed before, when Mary... So in case listeners don't remember, Mary, Steve's mum, has a stroke. Mm-hmm. And Miranda makes the massive, very impressive commitment to let her come and stay with them or live with them.
I'd forgotten the stroke. I thought she had dementia, but no, she has a stroke.
Yeah, same, yeah. And it's better, actually, because it would have been too sudden if it had been dementia. Because at first I was like, oh, this is way too sudden, what's happening? Mm-hmm. And I love it when that first happens and Steve goes to Miranda in the kitchen and her and Magda are just standing in the kitchen just like eating ice cream together. I just loved that. Like, and it shows that like their relationship with Magda is so much more than Magda just being like the maid, I guess.
The housekeeper. Oh, no, she's part of the family now. And I think that's kind of, it's really, really lovely. Obviously, Magda's back in the films as well. And that's really, really lovely. So she is very much part of the family.
Shout out to...
Lynn Cohen,
yeah.
Although, R.I.P.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. This pizza tastes like garbage.
Oh, Mary. Yeah.
Mary.
My grandma has dementia and it is one of the most heartbreaking things in the world that somebody that you know starts to change and it's very, very, very sad. But no, Miranda's sacrifice in this episode is huge.
Yeah.
Huge for Miranda because she has been a solitary figure for much of the show and we know she's not the world's biggest Mary Brady fan. So, you didn't even mention a mother when we were dating. And
where did she come from? God, it's really a really good job, isn't it? Like, what a great job they've done. Shout out, we slag him off a lot. But shout out to Michael Patrick King. He really did get it. You know, I think as right as with the exception of like them all ending up with someone,
that's the only quibble with this episode. I think the slap was awkwardly choreographed, but I wouldn't have put it. Mm. I think, and I've said this before on this podcast, I think Sex and the City and Buffy, if I had to highlight two season finales, which I think they almost nail it. I know a lot of people really love the 6 Feet Under ending as well. But if you can think of two shows that I think really get the landing onto the runway, I think it's Sex and the City and Buffy. Now, the thing with Buffy, of course, is it's never come back. So it really was just a lovely... It was an end.
Yes.
Whereas, obviously... Well... we've talked about this a long time. Are we glad I'm Just Like That exists? I can't look away from it, and yet I don't know. It's one of those
things. I'm glad because it means more lovely podcasting with you.
Yes, of course we will be back. We will be back, of course, when season 3 drops. Dylan and I will be there to discuss it.
You
do not need to go away from this episode feeling bereft.
Yeah, and we won't be ending properly until the end of season 15 of And Just Like That, which has just been announced.
The Che Diaz spin-off.
I think I was chatting to Martin about this, producer Martin, and he said, and I agree, I think surely this is the last season 3. I think it's got three, I think it's...
Dylan, we said that last year.
We said that season 1.
Dylan, please find the clip where we say, surely this is the end. They even called the last episode The Last Dinner and then announced a third season. It was a 2-part finale called The Last Dinner.
Well, we'll see. We've got special things planned. Well, not technically planned yet, but we're planning to plan special things for the films as well.
Yes. We have big plans. Yes. Well, actually, we don't. But we have plans.
We're going to have big plans. And I'm sure everyone can guess the sort of thing.
And they will include you, dear
listeners.
And speaking of that, we asked you last week. We did. It was our time for our great 6-year questionnaire. let's throw it over to Dylan, who has been doing lots of admin this week, for which I'm very grateful because I've been working away.
Yeah, we had loads of messages. It took me, and it was so lovely. Like I can't think of a way I'd rather pass my time, really. But it took basically all day go through everyone's responses. So thank you so much. We asked three questions, four questions on our Instagram. Best episode, what's your favourite episode ever? Who's the best man ever? I just put best man and just left people to respond. Best Carrie fashion moment. That was an interesting one. And would you have changed the ending? People largely agreed with us on with what we've just said on the ending. Most people said the thing where they were like, it was really, really good, but would be great if at least one of them had ended single.
Sure.
Eleanor said, just simply said, wouldn't have done Unjust Like That.
I might be with you on that.
Amy says, I wish they'd given Miranda at least one decent haircut.
Oh no, she looked nice at her wedding.
She did.
It was very, that hair, that flicky out hair was very in the early noughties. Look at Josie and the Pussycats.
And like any girl band around that time as well.
Yeah, the members of Dream.
Yeah. Bewitched.
Oh god.
They were a bit earlier, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Natasha says, I don't think Samantha would be in that relationship with Smith for that length of time. They wanted to tie her up in a bow so they couldn't leave her dingle. But she thrives in her independence. Interesting take, which is slightly different from what we said, but I do see that. Sean says, his name was John, the biggest anticlimax of all time. John.
John.
About Mr.
But then they fancy it up for the film. John James Preston,
yeah. Carrie Preston. Mm. Mm-hmm. Carrie Preston, which is the name
of... No, she keeps Carrie Bradshaw, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, Carrie Bradshaw, yeah. Mm. Carrie Bradshaw, Preston, Petrovsky, Nijinsky. sure. best man was great. So
Was this just a wash of people just writing Aiden in your DMs?
Well, do you want to give a guess who won by a huge, huge margin? He won by double the person after him got. More than double. Triple the person after
him. So this is all the men?
Any man, yeah.
Steve,
yeah. Steve won by a huge margin. Followed by Smith. Smith was second. Harry was fifth.
Fifth?
Yeah.
He was in...
Harry, so it goes Steve, Smith, then Harry was third.
Okay.
Then Aiden was fifth and Big was last.
Oh. Were there any votes for Skipper?
No, Skippy. Oh, poor Skippy. Poor but we did Skippy. Have, we had one vote for Patrick Casey, the alcoholic, who was great. One vote for the detective who deals with Carrie's stolen shoes.
Oh, who dates Miranda. Yeah.
I'm no Mina Suvari. He got a vote. and then we got a vote
For Ray the Jazz Man. Anything for Ray. Surprising.
Joel Golby was a fan. Joel liked Ray, but Joel's a straight man, so that's, I don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't get a vote.
We got one for the NYU wrestling coach from My Motherboard Myself.
Who tries to find, that is definitely a gay man who enjoys a wrestling singlet.
Oh, all of these obscure ones were from gay men, let me say.
Of course.
We've got an eye for the obscure details. And then finally, there was one, this really made me laugh, one, and they just simply put the taxi driver. I'm not sure from like which episode or film or where that's from.
Because obviously, for my mind, my head always goes to Bobby Cannavale playing the guy with funky spunk.
Oh yeah, Bobby.
But that's because he's Bobby Cannavale. Yeah, it's nothing to do with his funky spunk.
What would my sexiest man ever? Do you know what? As much as the second film is cursed, Samantha's man in the second film, hot. Like this, the grey haired. I think he's Danish. Yeah. Grey haired man.
Yeah.
And fucking Dr. Robert Leeds for me.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Stunning. And Carrie's man, the sailor, who she bins
who he slags off New York. Yeah.
Gorge, yeah, don't talk shit about my man. My
no votes for John Bon Jovi. John Bon Jovi.
Nothing for John Bon Jovi. Nothing for Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper was in it.
Original chin Bradley Cooper, yeah.
Nothing for, oh, we both fancied the, do you remember the guy who took video, secret videos? We both fancied
Gabriel Macht from Suits, yeah.
Hot, yeah.
Gorgeous. But it's more about the actors rather than the characters.
Yeah.
Timothy Oliphant was in there as well, you know.
But yeah, no surprise that Steve won and deserved.
Yeah, deserved.
Favourite fashion moment?
Ooh, I hope you're going to do a carousel of these on our Instagram, Dylan.
That's a great show.
Not to give you more homework. But...
That's a great idea. This was really interesting and very unexpected, I thought.
Okay.
So honourable mentions go to the pink dress where she falls in the lake with Big. The sort of floaty, flowery pink dress. The pink dress she wears to have lunch with Big when he tells her that him and Natasha are engaged. That scene where she like trips and the waiter goes over it, like that one.
Falls at the plaza.
Second was her fur coat. Just simply, everyone was like, her fur coat came second.
It's very iconic.
Like when they're at the game, sports game. When she's like walking down the street, swinging the bags with it. It is iconic, that coat. A couple for, but not as many as I expected, for the Dior newspaper print dress.
That she challenges Natasha over lunch, yeah.
Yeah, but won by a huge margin, her just simple grey dress with aviator shades.
Yeah. Is that the one where she sees the girls through the window? Yeah,
bangs on the window, yeah. Which surprised me, but I'm not mad.
It's an absolutely timeless look. Any of us could wear it now.
Yeah.
For me, you of course know my favourite. It's the one she wears to see Aiden in the bar when he's flirting with the barmaid, which is she's wearing a crop top with a striped pencil skirt.
Oh, yeah.
A little kind of flat cap.
Chimney sweep hat.
Yeah, chimney suit. Yeah, it's absolutely batshit. But for me, that's my favourite Carrie look.
Mine is La Doloric Squeeze when she's wearing the crop top and she has the riding crop at one point and she's wearing the... Are we allowed to say gypsy skirt? Because I've been saying gypsy skirt. Are we allowed to say it? It's what it's called. But it sounds a bit un-PC. But the gypsy skirt as well. Just love that silhouette and she looks stunning.
Well, then that just brings us to favourite episodes.
Yes. Do we want to guess again for this one?
I would say Real Me.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not by a huge margin, though. This one was really interesting. I'm not going to read them all out because it was literally... There was
so
many...
Spread across the board, yeah.
Everyone's got such different tastes. Hot Child in the City came second.
Wow.
Yeah, which for us was like... I mean, I like it, but you're not... I know you're not particularly keen on that one.
It's a memorable one.
Yeah. Yeah, true. True. X in the City got a few. The Post It Always Sticks Twice got a few. Maxine Herron voted for The Real Me and said, that's a very transsexual answer, I know, but I'm voting for The Real Me. Hi, Maxine. Yeah. So that's that.
I think for me, I would also have to have up there Boy Interrupted. Samantha Jones!
Yeah, well, that's my favourite, definitely. Mm. That only got one vote.
They shoot single people, don't they? Which is the Bradley Cooper episode. Oh, I also love The Freak Show, the one where she goes mental.
Yeah, the Tweety Bird.
Freaks out a man. Yeah.
Tweety Bird tattoo. Yeah, really interesting. Oh. Yeah, and it's so nice to hear from our listeners on the last one.
We'll do a carousel of favourite outfits and favourite episodes, and then the rest of you can feel free to comment underneath those posts with your favourites as well.
Yes.
Very well, Dylan. Well, that brings us to the end.
Yeah, it's been a bumper episode, this one, and rightly so.
What will we do, Dylan, when we don't speak to each other every week?
We could go for brunch again in Brighton.
Let's definitely do that. Let's continue our friend. That's why I said whenever it was, 2019. Dylan and I didn't know each other very well. We'd done one photo shoot together for Dylan's old magazine.
Yeah.
And Dylan was just like, what do you think? Sex and the City podcast. And I was like, well, I really like Dylan. And this feels like a great excuse to harass him. And here we are.
We've recorded in recording studios across continents.
In pandemics.
Through pandemics, through storms, you recorded from a hotel room during a storm.
Oh, wow, yes. God.
Yeah, what a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. And we're not done. Like I said, we're not done yet. Because neither of us are dying. And are you dying? And also, we'll be back. So, I mean, like I said, love it or hate it. And just like that, we'll keep keep our relationship and this podcast alive. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to, when I have my life back, I'm going to reorder our episodes. So from going forward, and just like that, season one will be season 7. And just like that, season 2 will be series 8. And the new series will be season 9. Because frankly, it's all very chaotic up on our feed. So I'm going to get that sorted. So don't be confused when I'm just like that becomes season 7.
Season 7 of our podcast, yeah.
Correct. Rather than,
yeah, because, and also Apple like did something weird with their, like Apple Podcasts nightmare.
Cursed.
Hi Apple, don't take us down though. what I think is the next natural progression really is we do, as Sex and the City did with And Just Like That, we do a spin-off podcast with Sean Faye. We could do it with Sean Faye, and it could be all about a different angle of Sex and the City, and we just start again from the beginning.
Yeah, sure.
We'll be back probably next year for And Just Like That.
I think it might be later. No, they haven't started filming yet. There's no way it's going to be this year. Could be. Could be really late in the year.
Well, they banged out that they banged out season 2 like pretty quick.
I think they're due to film. I think as soon as Sarah Jessica Parker is done in London, they're straight into recording. So actually, do you know what? November, December is not beyond the realm of possibility, actually. So let's see.
Let's see.
Okay. Again, this is as good a time as any to say thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
If you're not an I'm Just Like That person, and this is where you want to take the off ramp. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you through this podcast every week. 99.99% of you are so funny, so lovely, and so friendly. And the other 1% is that one person who just tells me and Dylan off for talking about ourselves.
Which we need to be, some, I don't know, but we deserve to be taken. Everyone needs a bit of taking down a peg or two.
Sure, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to be told you have a man voice every once in a while. Until next time, you've got the love we need to see us through.
Yeah.
And we will see you really, really soon. Bye for now.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.